All right, folks, the baseball team is in another successful regular season, albeit a quick flash in the last Pac-12 tournament. Our guest, wired into that program, Duck Football, provides the outstanding coverage as part of the 24/7 team. You can follow him on Twitter. Use the handle at Jared_Mac7. Jared, thanks a million for the time. How's life treating you as we count down May?
It's going pretty fast. End of May kind of crept up on me, but, life is good regardless.
Good to hear. I know there were kind of a few anxious moments selection Monday. I didn't see the O pop up till late, but fair to say that was more because of timing when they released the regions, because as a 3 seed, there was no real doubt they were making the field, was there?
I didn't have a doubt. Oregon was the highest rated in the RPI. I think an at-large bid at number 52 overall. But I felt like they had the resume to do it. They finished third in the Pac-12. They were a game away from finishing first in the Pac-12. They just didn't have a really hard out-of-conference schedule with teams like Lafayette. They had some good games down there in Dallas to start the season, but the RPI just wasn't great. But I thought that they were good enough in the Pac-12. They went 8-2 in their 10 weekend series. They only finished with one sweep, so maybe if they swept more, would have been more obvious. But I always felt confident about it. There were certainly some nerves in the outfield. You could kind of tell from some of the players and a coach or two, but I always felt that they had a good enough resume to get into the tournament, and they did. Now they're going down to Santa Barbara.
So I want to play a little, I guess I could call it a game. What did you think versus what did you see? Because you're one of the few who are there before they play, practice, leading up, off season. So, the injuries to the rotation last year certainly made its impact. So what did you think heading in, and how would you evaluate the starting pitching, I guess up until now?
Well, going into the season, I thought that they could be a good unit. I thought a lot of it kind of relied upon how RJ Gordon would return from his internal brace procedure, which is an alternative to Tommy John, and how Grayson Grinsell would, figure out how to throw all these extra innings as a sophomore. He only finished with 40 or something innings last year as a true freshman. You felt pretty good about Kevin Sider, who was, a transfer from Quinnipiac, who threw 80, 90 innings in his final season at the Q and could come to the Power Five and at least be a serviceable Sunday starter. But overall, I think they've been good. They've been kind of up and down in the last couple weeks, but I thought they pitched well at the Pac-12 tournament. RJ Gordon was a solid Friday night guy every week. Again, he was up and down too. Some nights he would look fantastic, like a guy who could be a future MLB-er, and then other weeks it just wasn't his day. You look for more consistency out of your Friday night guy, but it was fine. Grayson Grinsell was good too, and then Sider really came into his own towards the end of the season, which I thought was really helpful. Didn't get a chance to pitch in the Pac-12 tournament, but hopefully he gets a chance to go in the Santa Barbara regional. But I think that the rotation was probably a bit above my expectations going into the season. I thought they would be good, but I think at points during the year, I thought they were really good.
Talking Duck Baseball, Jared Mack, 24/7 Sports. We know the offense lost a lot. Sabalos, Drew Cowley, Colby Shade, Nishita at the top. So, again, thoughts on what these bats were capable of when the season started versus how they actually performed to get him back in the dance?
I think that they did kind of exactly how I expected. Like you mentioned, you went through the list of people. They lost basically 70% of their offensive production from a season ago. I think the official number is actually 72%. I remember doing the math earlier in the year. But they were fine. There was a lot of dudes who were, true sophomores, redshirt sophomores or something like that, who just never got a lot of playing experience at the Power Five level. And there were some aches and pains. There were some really good stretches. Even though they lost the series to Stanford, that's kind of where they got into their rhythm for the rest of the Pac-12 season. They were capable of putting up 10 to 12 runs a game, but there were also some, you know, some really down moments where if they played against good pitching, which they'll probably see this weekend in Santa Barbara, they could be not taken advantage of, but they could really struggle. Pitchers who can locate their off speed for strikes, who have a plus fastball, who can locate that as well in the upper 90s or mid 90s. Like, obviously that's hard for a lot of teams, but you know, last year's team was so deep with just pure talent and then guys who had been around the Power Five level for a couple of years or just had experience at other colleges, that this year's team, they're just aches and pains. They're growing pains. When like one of your best hitters is, you know, a true freshman in Maddox Maloney, sometimes that's a good thing because he's a really good hitter. Sometimes it's maybe not the best thing because a true freshman probably shouldn't be your best hitter every year. But, you know, I think it's kind of a catch-22 for the team. Like, they were good, they were bad, there were some bright moments, some bad moments. You know, you just hope that they go into this NCAA regional with on a little bit of a hot streak so that they can maybe win a game or two there.
And of course, you got to lock it down late. Josh Malaris was the saves guy last year with the Blue Jays. Austin Anderson's with the Orioles. What was your read on the performance of this Duck bullpen to date?
You know, I thought the bullpen was actually better than I anticipated. Like you said, Malaris is out, so they needed a closer. I thought it would be Brock Moore. It really wasn't Brock Moore. Brock was kind of like a multi-inning guy, seven, eighth inning dude, or sometimes would come in the fifth and sixth. It ended up being Logan Mercado, who's had his ups and downs, but when he's been 100% fresh and he's able to locate his off-speed either for a strike or get swings and misses, he's really good. But, you know, the surprising names are Brock Moore, a guy from Menlo College who transferred in, hit 101 earlier this year on the radar gun, but consistently sits like 95 to 97, has been able to locate his changeup and slider later in the year that has just given him, you know, two more out pitches and really confused hitters when they can't just sit fastball. And then Bradley Mullen, a Gonzaga transfer, who at Gonzaga, his ERA in his last 2 years there was over six. This year it's under two. He's been great, a left-handed reliever, you know, fastball, cutter, curveball, slider. Been able to mix a lot of pitches in there. Throws really funky, kind of keeps hitters off balance. So the back of the bullpen, the 7, 8, 9 dudes have been there. And there's been kind of like a revolving door of people who can fit in through the 5th, 6th, and 7th. But I think overall there's some good arms. It's just there's been a couple injuries in the last week or last couple of weeks where, you know, if a starter can only go 3 innings because he's getting shelled or, you know, Lord forbid he gets hurt or something like that, then I kind of worry about what their depth is there. But overall, I think the bullpen's actually been a huge positive for this team, considering last year where, you know, they had Malaris and that was kind of it. And then Anderson every once in a while.
Talking with Jared Mack, 24/7 Sports. And then, of course, the draw. Santa Barbara's the 1 seed. Fresno State's the 4 seed. We know that Coach Waz said, no, forget them. Focus one game at a time. This San Diego team won 40 games, their conference tournament. I mean, in series this year, they beat Arizona, Michigan. What have you learned about them?
San Diego is a legit team. I do not think that this is the best of draws for Oregon. Like I was saying earlier, I think that they've struggled. The Ducks specifically have struggled against good pitching. And San Diego and then UCSB eventually, but San Diego's got really good stuff. Josh Randall, who's probably going to be their number one dude come Friday at noon. He's a top 150 draft prospect on MLB.com. 3.74 ERA, 67.1 innings pitch, 78 strikeouts. He's got great stuff. He's consistently pounding the zone. His whip is just above 1.2, so that indicates that he doesn't let people on. And then they have Connor Thurman in the back of the bullpen, whose whip is under one, which is really impressive. And then offensively, Jacob Christian is a dude. He's got 23 home runs this year. I think it's 60 RBIs. He's hitting well above 300. He's slugging 800. Like, he's just an absolute monster. And then there's a couple other guys in the team who do a really good job on getting on base. I think as a team, San Diego is over 400 on base percentage, which, again, is very impressive. And there's a reason that they won, you know, 40 games this year. There's a reason that they only lost 4 conference games. San Diego is always a good ball club on the West Coast. I don't think they get the credit they deserve because they're a mid-major. But if you're going to watch on Friday, like, this is a good team. This is not, you know, this isn't like San Diego football or something like that. Like, it's a very quality ball club, and it will be, you know, a tough out for Oregon. It'll be a tough out. If San Diego wins, it'll be a tough out for UCSB. I think it's a really good team.
I want to get to some Duck football. You wrote a piece about Oregon's two starting tackles, Josh Connerly and Johnny Cornelius, and how Pro Football Focus has them both in the top 10 in the country. I mean, Jared, heading into what is perceived as the more physical Big Ten, I mean, how key does that sound as Oregon transitions to this new league?
Yeah, it's incredibly important. I thought that both of those guys were really good last season. I thought Cornelius was actually better than Connerly, but Connerly had some of the tougher draws when, you know, it's going against Braylon Trice and against Washington two times last year. And it's the quarterback's blind side. But now that'll be Cornelius's job as the right tackle with Gabriel being a lefty. But overall, it's incredibly important. When you can have two elite tackles on both sides of the line, it helps your offensive line tremendously because now you don't have to worry about that. You know, like as a guard, you don't have to worry about maybe rotating out to help your tackle to just keep your quarterback, you know, standing, not to be on the ground. But, you know, with Connerly, I think he needs to add a little bit more weight. But again, he's just a sophomore. He's going into his junior season. I think the sky's the limit for him. He could be a guy who, if he shows up and plays well in this year in the Big Ten and becomes like a real, you know, first team all Big Ten caliber offensive tackle, you could see his name get listed as a top NFL draft pick because of his size, his versatility, and his youth. And then Cornelius, a Rhode Island transfer, there were a lot of question marks about how he would perform at the Power 5 level. He was fantastic last year. Didn't allow a sack, just a handful of pressures all year long against Bo Nix. Always helps when the offense is throwing the ball quick. But, you know, he's again, a really athletic, big dude who can get out and run in pass block and run block, whatever the case may be. And other than LSU, who has Will Campbell, I think, and Emory Jones, I think Oregon has the best tackle duo in the country. And I don't know if Cornelius is a first-round pick, maybe just because of his age and maybe a little bit of inexperience, but he's a draft pick. He's a guy who's going to play tackle or maybe guard at the next level. Like, there's no doubt about it. But I think that that's tremendously helpful, especially when you're when Marcus Harper comes back and Matthew Bedford, who's already been in the Big Ten. When you can put all those guys together, it's a really outstanding offensive line.
Couple final thoughts for Jared Mack at 24/7 Sports. You did a ranking of the incoming transfers, which, of course, has become so critical. As for the defensive line, they lost a lot. I mean, from Dorless to Popo to Rogers. So who are a couple of the big fellas up front you mentioned you think are going to kind of ease those departures?
Yeah, it's two big names, and one of them is a recent addition. It's Jamari Caldwell, who committed to Oregon, I think, back in January, and recent commit Derek Harmon from Michigan State. I think both of these guys are the real deal. You know, Harmon was really well sought after. I think he visited USC and Colorado and a couple other schools. Same with Jamari Caldwell. They're both, you know, top 100 players in the transfer portal class of 2024, according to 24/7 Sports. You mentioned it, Steve. You know, they lost a lot in their defensive line from last season, and they need to replace that. And they've done a good job recruiting the high school ranks as well, bringing in a bunch of four stars, a couple kids from Texas. But you're going to need some experience, and that's what Caldwell and Harmon deliver. They're both ginormous people. I think Caldwell is like 6'1", 6'2", 315 pounds. Harmon, at least Michigan State had him listed at 6'5", 330 pounds, 320 pounds. They're large people, and that's what you need in the Big Ten. I think what they both do extremely well is they fill run gaps while also are really nimble on their feet for big guys and can, you know, break through double teams, can get around a pulling guard or a center, can rush the passer. I think they're every down defensive lineman. And when you have the depth behind them that I think Oregon thinks that they have, we'll have to see it on the field for me to believe it. I just haven't seen enough of it. But when you have the depth that they have, like Amari Washington and other guys, you know, now you see how this can be a dominant front against a lot of teams in the Big Ten and the non-conference. And then add in Jordan Birch, Mateo Uyunglele, Blake Purchase, all those guys. And this is a really good defensive line.
And the secondary took a hit as well. I mean, top cover guy, maybe most physical presence, Evan Williams, Steady Eddie, and Steve Stevens, who are some of the replacement players from the portal fans need to know about.
Yeah, I think the number one guy is Jabbar Muhammad, who is a transfer from Washington. He did a really good job last year against Troy Franklin in the Pac-12 championship game. You know, Troy Franklin got his in the first time that they met around, but that's a darn good college receiver right there. So he was going to get his no matter what. But Jabbar is going to be, at least on paper, the lockdown dude of this year's defense in the Big Ten. He's a different type of player than Kyrie Jackson was. He's not as tall or as long, but he's physical. He's a true lockdown kind of coverage guy on the outside. I think he's going to be playing more boundary than field corner. I think that'll be Jaleel Florence or Cam Alexander. But he's a legit dude. He was one of the most sought-after players after Kalen DeBoer left Washington. And, you know, he picked Oregon over Alabama to follow him, follow DeBoer down to Bama. And I think that he's really, really good. I think he's probably one of the most talented, if not the most talented players on the defensive side of the ball. I really like him. And then Kobe Savage and Brandon Johnson, the two other names to know. Kobe Savage will be replacing Steve Stevens, I think, at that free safety position that he played last season. Savage is a Kansas State transfer, a guy who kind of plays more similar to Bennett Williams and Evan Williams in the last couple of seasons, kind of downhill, shorter, stouter guy. But Brandon Johnson is one of the more intriguing names. He's going to play nickel, star safety, whatever you want to call it for Oregon in this 4-2-5 defense. Comes from Duke, where his head coach, Mike Elko, also played a 4-2-5 defense. So I don't think it'll be that much of a transition. But, yeah, he had 8.5 tackles for loss last season. I think 3.5 sacks for a safety, which is really impressive, and you very rarely see that. Hard nose, good coverage guy when asked, but can get after the quarterback and plays downhill, especially against the run. So, and you're going to need a lot of that in the Big Ten.
Folks, he's Jared Mack, always providing the tip-top and latest information. Baseball, football, gets it done for 24/7 sports online, duckterritory.com. Subscribe, support local journalism on Twitter at Jared_Mack7. Jared, always appreciate your time. Great stuff. Thanks a million. Of course, look forward to talking again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Steve.
All right, take it easy.